Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the, 13th of June, Anno Domini 2015. What?
Friday the 13th falls on a
Saturday this year.
Yeah.
And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Here comes the blues.
And maybe the news as soon as he finds the piece of paper.
I knew there was something I forgot to do. Apple, I don't think anything happened this week of any interest to you.
Nah. Actually, no, because you can't get any of it now.
Yeah. So it happened, but it wasn't interesting. I get that. Apple had their Worldwide Developers Conference this week. Let me explain. No, there is too much. Let me sum up. There really is too much.
It's a 2.5 hour keynote.
Yeah. The latest OS X will be named OS X El Capitan. Features include natural language searches, auto-arrange windows. You can make the cursor bigger by shaking the mouse.
Because we all do that when we're trying to find the cursor on our laptop.
Right. And pin sites in Safari. 40% faster than Yosemite. Available to developers today. Public beta in July. Out for free in the fall. iOS 9. Let's see. New Siri UI. There's an API for search. Siri and Spotlight are getting more integrated. Siri getting better at prediction with a far lower word error rate. You can make checklists, draw and sketch inside of notes. Maps get some love. New app called News, like Flipboard, pulls in news articles from your favorite news sites. HomeKit now supports window shades, motion sensors, security systems, remote access via iCloud. Public beta is available now, I think right now. Apple Pay, all four major credit card companies over 1 million locations. Sorry, what?
So the developer beta is out. Public beta later this summer.
Later this summer, okay. But there will be one. The Apple Pay Reader, which was developed by Square, so it'll look kind of like that for peer-to-peer transactions. Passbook is being renamed Wallet, so we now have Google Wallet and Apple Wallet, because apparently they can't think of a different name. On the iPad, shortcuts for app switching, split-screen multitasking, quick type, put two fingers down on the on-screen keyboard, it becomes a trackpad, side-by-side apps, picture-in-picture available on iPad Air and up, Mini 2 and up. Let's see, the Apple Watch, Watch OS 2, not to be confused with the real OS 2. With new watch faces, developers can build their own complications, which are widgets that show updates and gauges on the watch face. Complications is a term that the watch manufacturers have used for generations to talk about things that aren't the watch.
Because it's so complicated to add those little gears in there to make it happen.
Exactly. So back in the day when your grandfather clock had phases of the moon on it, that was called a complication. Having a second dial for a different time zone, that's a complication. So they're calling them complications, not because they're idiots or because they're that hard to do, but because that's the right term. A new feature called Time Travel lets you rotate the digital crown to zoom into the future and see what's coming up. More new features. Reply to email, bedside alarm clock, send scribbled messages in multiple colors, play video on the watch. Developer beta is available now, wide release in the fall for free. Apple Music. Live DJs broadcasting and hosting live radio streams you can listen to in 150 countries. Handpicked suggestions, 24/7 live global radio. Beats Connect lets unsigned artists connect with fans. Beats Music has all of iTunes music to buy or stream with curated recommendations. Launching June 30th in 100 countries with Android this fall, with Windows and Android versions, first 3 months free, $10 a month or $15 a month for a family plan of up to six. That's enough. We only got 2 hours. Apple's Mark Poll of the Week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Apple's WWDC announcements, and your choices are, wow, interesting. Wait, you guys didn't have that stuff? Apple what now? And so far, we've got it taking quite a while to update. But we've got a bunch of votes, so please vote in the poll. When you're done with that, 27 votes. And most of you have voted for Apple What Now, because our listenership is not huge on Apple. When you're done with that, we know you'll have more to say. So scroll down on the right. You'll see under Fascinating Stuff, you'll find the forums. The second forum choice is a poll discussion. And under 13 June 15, Apple's WWDC announcement. And, of course, thank you, thank you. Don't applaud, throw money. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ.
Coins That's preferred.
What?
Coins preferred.
Coins preferred. Bitcoins preferred. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Paper doesn't hurt and you can make it into a little airplane.
That's exactly right. We'll take paper any day.
So this actually the announcements are a lot of what developers and users have been hoping for. No radically new features, just performance enhancements, stability enhancements, enhancing existing features to give them better capability, and letting just things work better together. One of the problems we've been seeing over the years in the Apple community is annual updates to the OS. For both the computers and the phones, it's hard on developers. It's hard on users. You know, every year there's a new OS. Most people don't even realize they're two or three OSs behind already because things come out so fast. At least in the Windows world, you got a good 10 years between good operating systems.
Right.
XP to 7, was it?
Right. Exactly.
And now with Windows 10, they set a firm release date now. Was it July 29th, was it? To get ahead of the Apple release.
Oh, right.
But inevitably, there'll be comparisons. The Windows release will be compared against the Apple public beta, because those will be the two things that are available then.
Yeah.
And, journalists need clicks.
Right. And so there will be a lot of Apple wipes out the competition. Windows kills Apple.
Yeah.
Android's Apple killer. There'll be a lot of nonsensical titles about a lot of nonsensical things. But in the long run, it'll just all play out the way it always plays out. There are Windows people, there are Apple people, there are Google people.
Yep.
And never the trice shall meet. So, all right, to the phones. Our first caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Hi. I've got a couple of USB port expander questions, and then I got a Google question if there's time for it. If I buy a USB 3, is it backward compatible with USB laptops and desktops?
Yes.
Okay.
You mean the device, whatever device itself you buy, or?
Well, I want to buy the USB 3 because in the
USB
future,
3
if I get
what?
A computer that's got USB 3.
Oh, a USB 3 device or a hub?
I'm going to buy a USB, I want to buy a USB 3 hub because one of the two USB ports on one of our household laptops is somebody pushed it way inside the computer. There's only one USB port left. It's USB 2 port. It's the only one left, and I want to not keep plugging in and out of that one to charge a Kindle, to put the mouse back in. So I want to buy a USB port expander. And so my question is, do I buy a USB 2 because that's what the laptop and our desktops are right now? I'd like to buy a USB 3 port expander to account for in the future when we upgrade our computers.
Well, you probably want to buy a USB 3 hub. Port expanders are generally only for a specific model laptop. So a USB 3 hub allows you to plug a one USB port into your computer and gives you 3, 5, 7, however many USB ports you buy.
Okay, that's what I mean, that
is
a hub.
The USB 3 hub will not run at USB 3 speeds if you're only plugging it into a USB 2 device.
Right, but it will work.
That answers that question.
And when you get your next computer that does have USB 3 on it, you can take that hub along and it will run faster at USB 3 speeds.
That's great. Now, the only other thing I need to know is that hub will only at this point be used to plug in a mouse and simultaneously when a Kindle Paperwhite needs recharging to recharge the Kindle Paperwhite.
Well, then
I
you have
need to have a powered USB hub?
Yes.
Yes, you need two special things on the hub. It has to be powered, so it has to have an AC adapter with it, and it has to have a charging port. Not all USB hubs have charging ports. They just have USB pass-through, basically.
Right.
So you need three things. You need USB 3, you need a charging port, and you need an AC adapter.
Right. Well, I know that the Kindle can be plugged in directly into the USB port on this laptop, and it charges. So
yes, but that's because it's a charging port.
But when I put the hub on, it's just not expanding that port. To do
no,
exactly the
thing. It expands USB, but it doesn't necessarily pass through extra power.
Right. So what happens is you need a powered port, that is to say, a port that has its own charger and its own plug to go into the wall.
Okay.
And then, for example, I have one from D-Link that has four regular ports and two powered ports. So I can plug six devices in. And of those six devices, two of them could charge.
Okay, good thing I'm asking you guys. It's a little more complicated than I thought it was going to be.
A little bit.
That takes care of the USB stuff. May I ask you one question about Google real
sure.
quick? Ever since I updated to Firefox 38.0.5, Google keeps coming up, a banner keeps coming up saying, do you want Google to be your default browser? It's always been my default browser. And then besides that, they're asking me, do I want to do X, Y, Z with Google? Do I want to go into, and you know, all these other things that Google offers. I'm wondering why I'm getting this stuff, it's kind of like pop-ups, but
yeah,
they're not pop-ups.
Because you upgraded Firefox, Firefox made itself the default browser. So then when you open Chrome again, you have to tell Chrome you want it to be the default browser.
You know what? I made a mistake there. I don't mean browser. I mean search engine. It's asking me if I want Google to be my default
right.
search engine.
And Firefox, your default search engine is something different.
It's Google.
Apparently not, or it wouldn't ask you.
Well,
and there's a difference between default search engine and default homepage. Your default homepage might be Google, right. but your default search engine could be Yahoo.
Yeah, well,
and those are things you set in the Firefox preferences.
Okay.
I think I remember Firefox went to Bing, didn't they?
Yeah.
So
well,
they're not using
but
Google
that's
anymore.
The thing. It's always been I made a mistake on that. It's not browser. I meant to say search engine. Google has always been my search engine forever and ever.
Right.
And ever.
That doesn't matter. You upgraded to a new version of Firefox, and its settings took over.
Okay.
So you have to go in and change it again.
Which I did, and I even called Google, and they said they sent me through a set of instructions on their website, and I did that to make it my default search engine, and I'm still getting the stuff. But plus the other stuff, the ads, which are asking me, do I want to have all these features of Google, which I don't really. Can I just uninstall this Firefox and go back to the earlier one?
Going back
not
to an
easily.
Earlier version is not easy, no. Okay, first, huh.
I would be interested to know how you got a phone number to call Google.
That doesn't happen.
I would guess that was not Google.
No, that was not Google.
Yeah, my suggestion to you first, dance the security tango.
Okay.
You may be getting pop-ups that are not actually from Google.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would definitely don't put any private information into any of them. If you have, change your passwords.
Okay.
Change them now. And then dance the security tango and see if, in fact, you've been hit by something.
I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if you search in the search box on Firefox and it takes you to Google's actual page and you verify that by looking at the URL bar on the top. If it's actually taking you to Google's page, then Google is indeed your default search engine, and the messages are bogus.
And you said if I do what again?
In Firefox, you should have both your there should be a search box,
a search bar, and an address bar.
Yes,
they haven't gone unified yet, like every other browser.
Right. So if you type something into the search bar, where does it take you?
Takes me to Google search and it gives me a bunch of pages of different.
Right. Okay. Then it is very likely that the other messages are bogus and you need to dance security tango.
Okay. Very good. Thank you guys for your
help. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you have to be very, very careful looking for phone numbers for companies, because most companies, especially internet-only companies like Google and Yahoo, don't have phone numbers. They have websites that you go to. And so if you just do a search for someone offering help, you're going to find some random tech guy. And we have customers all the time that come in and have spent money with these random tech guys that were fake.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have our friend Jason from Altoona, Pennsylvania, on the line. Hi, Jason. What's up?
Okay. For the gentleman who just called in, I suggest he goes to Amazon to look up for a hub. When I built my, or I should say rebuilt my tower this past January, I picked up a hub for the first time. Before that, just using the USB ports on my motherboard. But they have a line of stuff called Amazon Basics, and I was kind of wary just on the fact that store brands usually are an inferior quality.
Right.
But both the hub and all the cables that I got from them were of exceptional quality, and I'm definitely not going to have an issue going back. I ended up picking up my last motherboard was only a USB 2.0, and the new one is USB 3.0, but it's got a limited number of three ports. So I wanted to protect those from frequent plug and unplug syndrome. So I got the hub, because for $40, the hub protects the motherboard port.
Excellent.
But I got a 10-port hub. It's got three fast charge ports on the front. It's got two more on the side, and I think five across the back.
Very nice. Cool.
It was like $40 when I bought it. So it's a good way to go. At least take a look at them. I don't think you'll be disappointed in the quality. That at least I can vouch for. As far as the, or something else, oh, the Firefox and the Google thing. I think that might have been a bug in Firefox because I was experiencing the same thing for a while. Even though I went through all the instructions to change the search engine back to Google, it was still giving me that error. And I tried to replicate it just now, but I couldn't. And it might be because I finally configured everything the way I like it. But
right. Well, yes, but there are also, by the way, Dennis, I'm sure you're still listening. There are also a couple of extensions that you can add to Firefox, one called Invisible Hand, which in the case of Invisible Hand, constantly changes your search engine back to Bing. So there may be some others that are doing a similar thing.
And there's a lot of the shady search engines that do the same thing. There's one called Search Protect, which sounds good. It protects your search from changing away from their advertising engine.
Right. And also if you've added any special bars, any toolbars, they can often change your default, and that's a problem as well. So unless you're actually using those, particularly search bars, we'll set their own agenda, and you don't get to change that. Thank you, Jason. Those are good points all the way around. Thanks.
If I may, I've been catching up on the podcasts from the last couple of months, and I've got something from the 23rd and the 2nd, if it's all right if I cover those.
Sure, quickly.
Charles from Penfield called on the 23rd about getting his bookmarks backed up, and I'm surprised you, of all people, didn't mention Xmarks. It's cross-browser, cross-operating system, mobile, and desktop.
I remember that, yeah. Now we remember. Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be Foxmarks, and then they changed to Xmarks to cover Chrome, Internet Explorer, yep. Firefox, Safari, all the way across the board.
Yep. And that's why I don't remember it, because I remember it as Foxmarks and I didn't think of it as anything.
Yep. So it will also synchronize bookmarks across your different browsers and to your different computers as well.
And it backs it up across the thing. All you do is log in, hit synchronize, and bam, all your bookmarks are restored from wherever you had them last.
Yep.
Back on May 2nd, Paul from Brighton called in. He had a system that was going to sleep and having excessive amount of time before it would recover. And it almost sounded like to me that the RAM image that was being stored might have been going across a bad sector on the drive, and the excessive boot time might have been the system trying to recover that data from the troubled sector.
That's certainly a possibility. Depends on how old your machine is. Well, no, it doesn't. Hard drives come bad out of the box. So, that's certainly a possibility.
And finally, if I've got time for one question for myself.
Yeah.
I've got a tower that has Windows XP on it. Please don't berate me. I understand the dangers of that. The trouble is I've got a bunch of games for my kids that won't even function in VirtualBox or VMware or any of those things. XP is the latest OS that will support them.
Yeah.
But the tower has no Ethernet connection. It has a wireless card, but the drivers for the card are not available for XP, so it doesn't have any network communication at all. However, it does dual boot to 8.1, and that has Internet connection. My concern when you guys were talking about it, it just dawned on me, could something come in through 8.1, see that it's a dual boot system, and it infect the XP?
Yes. Sure, because those files on the drive are going to be visible under the right circumstances. And believe me, the virus writers know about the right circumstances. Now, they're not going to be terribly harmful under XP if they can't get anywhere. I mean, if you got one that erased the drive or, you know, that sort of fare. But if you've got one that's trying to steal information, where's it going to send it to? It can't get out once you're under XP.
Yeah.
But yes, it can certainly affect it, mainly because you've got an open connection into those files. They're not, if for example, your virus looks at win.exe, it'll infect everyone it finds on the drive, and it will certainly find that one on that partition if that partition is at all possibly visible to Windows 8.1, which of course it will be.
Yeah. Do you think there's any danger doing that way? I mean, like I said,
well, if you get one that'll wipe out the drive, that sort of thing. I mean, there are the ones that, you know, you get a boot sector virus, you're going to have a real pain in the neck getting rid of it.
Well, but if it comes in through 8.1, it doesn't much matter whether or not the XP is there, as far as I could tell. But
still, I mean, if it also infects the boot sector of the other partition.
And
that's the way
thing,
they work. Hold on now. That's the way they work. They will look for every boot sector on every mounted drive and partition on your machine.
And there's some that will even see your network shares as mounted drives and infect those shares as well.
Right.
So, you know, CDEF, you know, any drive you have there, some of the virus can infect those drives. And because there's a lot of, it might be safe. There's a lot of XP viruses still flying around the internet. It's unlikely that they would be able to get through your 8.1 with an up-to-date antivirus, but it's possible.
Right. It's possible.
And one last thing, if I may.
Yeah, go.
Do you remember the MyMinders app?
I do.
You have any idea on how to shut it off?
You should be able to send here's what you want to do. Send me your, if you don't mind, email me your phone number. I'll make sure they shut it off.
I can do that. Nick@soundbites.com?
Nick@asknick.com.
I can do that, too.
And I'll get it shut off probably tonight, tomorrow, something along that line.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Yep. Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.
That was quite a jam-packed question.
Gives us
a couple of answers and then a couple of questions,
too. Yep. The MyMinders app is being reconfigured and therefore not quite working the way we want it to. It's theoretically going to, you can join or stop or do whatever you want based on just texting something, but the texting
in portion is apparently not working. So they're on it, but I'll make sure that Jason gets his stuff done. And shockingly, we have time to talk to Mark from Greece. Mark, what's up?
Hello, how are you today?
Peachy, you?
I'm wonderful. Jumping back to last week when you were talking about the Windows 10 update.
Yes.
And about it being free for a year.
Yes.
And all the questions about it. Well, I did a little research, found out that they actually are giving it to us for free, even after the year. It's not going to be a subscription based.
And where did you read this? Did you read it from Google? From Microsoft?
There were questions asked to Microsoft from PC World. The other one was PC Gamer.
Yes, and they have asked those questions.
Articles, and they are doing it for free. The little caveat that they put in and would not answer the question was, is it free for the lifetime of the device? And they didn't elaborate on it. They couldn't get them to answer that question.
Or the lifetime of Microsoft.
That might be short.
And they're saying, is that for the lifetime of the PC? Is that lifetime of the tablet? Is that lifetime of the phone? Are they're thinking that it's more for the mobile devices, the lifetime of the device, because they have such a short lifespan.
Yeah.
But it is going to be free. It is not going to be a subscription-based operating system where we're going to have to pay every year.
Well, unless they change their mind later.
Exactly. And
at this point in time, it looks like it's going to be that way. But, I mean,
I wouldn't count on that, Mark. And here's why.
I don't see them holding our operating systems hostage after a year.
Oh, I absolutely do. And here's why. Microsoft needs money.
Or they'll call it Windows 11 and charge you for it.
I get that, but the thing is that if they're asking me for a credit card when I want to update to a free operating system, I'm not giving it to them.
Right. So they'll probably.
And then you get an operating system that's no longer supported.
Right. But being that if they're not asking for that, I mean they're going to hold it hostage and become like ransomware.
I agree that if they say it's free now and they try to charge you for it later, that's a horrible, horrible PR disaster, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I don't foresee them doing that.
And that's because you're a Pollyanna kind of guy, Mark. God bless you.
I just look at it this way. If they never want, ever, ever want anybody to use their operating system again,
yes, I agree with you. On the other hand, I'm a cynical old so-and-so.
Giving it away for free.
Yep, I'm a cynic, and I believe that at some point, somebody in a boardroom is going to say, we're leaving a whole lot of money on the table there.
But here's the one thing, though, and we haven't heard much from folks in doing this, right, in upgrading to 10, is I think they're playing the odds. Microsoft is going to play the odds. And what I mean by that is if you've got an old Windows system, even if it's 5-6 years old, and you get Windows 10 on it. A lot of these, operating systems, yes, I can put them on machines. Do they run well? No. And the way they're going to sit there and say is, well, then, you know what? You got to get a new machine, and then that's going to be where they're going to get you with a paid version.
Right.
I agree with you 100% on that. Yeah. They're going to get us through new computers. And I'm scared of that device thing, because does that mean if my hard drive dies, my device is done, now I have to pay for Windows?
Well, that's the way it is.
They haven't clarified that yet, and I think that might be where they're going to put their money.
They have clarified that. That's been true since Windows XP. If you buy a new if you substantially change your computer, Microsoft considers it a new computer. And certainly on 7, if you substantially change it, you'd have to call to re-verify.
Correct.
And sometimes they won't let you. Yeah, I got a new hard drive, a new motherboard, a new video card, a new Ethernet card, and a new case.
Right, right.
But it's the same PC.
But it's the same computer. It's Abraham Lincoln's grandfather's axe. It's had 3 new heads and 5 new handles, but it's the same axe. Here's the other question I have. I want to see the end user license agreement. Because one of the things Microsoft has already said is that people who pirate the operating system will be shut down.
Initially, they said that pirates get it free too, but it will still be pirated.
Right, and that they have the right at any time to shut them down. Well, if they decide to charge for it later on and you don't pay for that that upgrade, suddenly you're a pirate, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way.
So I'm going to remain a skeptic for about 15 years on this. If it's free, I will be happily surprised, and I will admit I was wrong. But if they start charging, then I expect everybody else to admit I was right. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. I have never, ever been afraid to say I was wrong, but I don't think I am in this particular case. Back in just a couple of minutes with Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Joel from Pittsford, New York, on the line. Welcome, Joel. What's up?
Hi, guys. Hi, Nick. Wanted to get your perspective on the Office of Personnel Management hacks recently. I know you're a former system manager, and, you know, I thought actually you'd be ranting about that, but I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, they're the same as they always were. It's bad management. Anybody can get hit, and I get that. But you need processes in place to catch it quickly. You need policies in place to make sure your people are not doing stupid things. And you should be the sort of person who catches that fairly quickly. People get complacent. They have a lot of demands on their time and a lot of things that they're being asked to do immediately. And I get that. And that makes security generally takes a backseat to the fire of the day. But the problem is security is a fire every day. And you need to spend a certain amount of your day managing the security of your network. And it depends. You know, if you allow people to go play games during their lunch hour, you allow people to have off-site email or whatever, you're much more open to problems.
A lot of the big hacks we've heard about are people that just check their personal email real quick on their company computer.
Yep. And I get that. I get it. We're not an 18th century sweatshop. We give people a lot of freedom. We give people a lot of leeway, but with great leeway comes great responsibility. And and we find that people often don't have any responsibility. They don't care. It's not their network. And consequently, there are problems. So you need, as a system administrator, you need to have exception reports that you run constantly. And an exception report is exactly what it sounds like. I want to know when something out of the ordinary, an exception, happens. I don't want to know when people log in successfully. I want to know when somebody logs in, tries to log in, and is unsuccessful. Sometimes that's just somebody being fumble-fingered before their first cup of coffee. Sometimes that's somebody trying to break into your network. I want to know when somebody's system downloads something from the internet. Not the intranet, not your internal network, but the external network. What is that thing, and why is this person downloading it? I want to know that. That's an exception to the norm, and therefore I want to know that. So exception reports are really the most powerful thing that any system administrator can have, and so many of them don't have them. You got me started, Joel.
Okay, well, you know, it just seems like, you know, if I go to my bank, I use two-factor authentication, and you have to wonder whether that's the kind of thing that has to be implemented in the government.
But even so, once you're logged in, what are the safeguards?
Yeah.
Right? It's not the logging in is important, and having at least two-factor authentication on that is exceptional in terms of helping security. But once you're logged in, what's to prevent me from going to my private email? Particularly since everybody can access their private email from a web browser now. Are we blocking mail.google.com and mail.yahoo.com and mail.everybodyelse.com?
Maybe they should be.
Well, yes, they should be. But are they?
Sensitive computers are not just, you know, Joe Blow, you know, playing at his computer. These are government computers that have sensitive information.
That's right. But we also know that there are a lot of issues in terms of people. Rank hath its privileges, right? So if some guy wants a short password because he doesn't want to have to remember a long password, and that guy's a two-star general, and you're a private, hell, you could be a colonel, you could be a major.
Captain, he'll still
Captain,
get it.
You're still
anybody,
gonna, he gets what he wants.
Yeah.
You can't say no.
Well, wasn't there that story? I just found it here. The launch codes for the nuclear missiles were 00000.
Yeah.
Because the generals didn't want to have to remember a password.
Yep.
But there was a requirement that there was a password, and it is 00000000.
Yep.
And they were kept on 8 1/4-inch floppy disks.
Probably. They were probably taped up to the monitor.
I was going to say, under the console where they flipped the little switch up for the button.
Right. So, Joel, this is the kind of thing that I'm so sick and tired of hearing about these breaches. Somebody needs to sit down and say, you know what? I don't care if you're the president. I don't care if you're a joint chief of staff. I don't care who you are. You need to follow the rules just like everybody else because security matters.
Well, I'm sorry if I raised your blood pressure.
Leave him with me to deal with.
I have to tell you, I went to the doctor yesterday, and my blood pressure is, and I quote, awesome.
Good for you.
Awesome good or awesome bad?
Yeah. Oh, good question. No, awesome.
God, I've never seen anyone with blood pressure so high.
That's
be alive.
Awesome. Yeah. So either she was smiling.
She's writing a journal entry. We're going to write you. You're going to get a disease named after you.
This is awesome.
Okay, well, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Joel. Yep. Yeah, there are constant.
What I say to you in that.
I know exactly what you say to me.
All the capital letters, and I still love you.
I know. Thank you. I love you too. That's it. It's just the way it is. That may be the only thing that's right about me at this point in my life, but at least that is right, and
well,
so that's nice.
My cholesterol is great too.
My cholesterol is also awesome.
Don't bite me.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. And my secret? Genetics. I had nothing to do with it.
You too.
Look at me.
Your mic is off.
How is it possible that my blood pressure is low? Look at me.
I'm the one that's had a heart attack.
When
you're the healthiest one of us.
I went for my induction.
No, I still do pretty good.
When I was in my 20s and I went for my induction in Buffalo.
Yeah.
They took my blood pressure, didn't believe it, took it again, didn't believe it, took it a third time. By that point, my fingers were like sausages. They switched to the other arm and did it three times. They made me run up and down a flight of stairs 10 times and then took it again and still wouldn't believe it.
Well, my blood pressure, no, that's one thing I got to say is very good. I think I'm down to like 116 over 72.
Not bad.
No, and it stays there. That I'm good
with.
That's
not bad at all.
Cholesterol, well.
That's about where mine is. Sorry.
Working on that, and that's pretty good.
Yeah. I've got actually high good cholesterol.
No, I just have right now what they call chest of drawers.
Chest of drawers?
My chest is down around my drawers, and I'm still trying to lose it. But I'm working on it.
Yeah.
I got everything else.
I don't think I have time to read that. I don't know. You got 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got 3 minutes.
No, you got more than that.
As of Friday, June 12th, the internet is legally an open, unbiased network in the United States. Well, to be fair, it's been pretty open and unbiased up till now, but now the net neutrality ruling is coming into effect. Net neutrality rules were published by the Federal Communications Commission on 13 April, and the two-month waiting period for them has become effective ended this week. The ruling is being appealed by ISPs like AT&T and Verizon, which will likely take months, if not years, if it has to go to the Supreme Court. In the meantime, ISPs asked the court to halt parts of the ruling until there is a verdict on the appeal, but that request was denied. So net neutrality now becomes enforceable by the FCC. Consumers will benefit in some ways, but they will lose in others. Here's some of of what went on. The ruling provides rules of engagement for ISPs who deliver internet content via a mobile, satellite, or fixed cable connection. One of the main issues at hand is that many of these providers have a monopoly on the last mile of cable to your home. or last mile of internet of and whatever, whether it's cable or wireless or whatever. The spirit of the ruling is to make sure that these providers give fair access and delivery of internet content so that the internet remains an open access network. The ruling has two core components. The first major ruling is that ISPs now fall under the category of telecommunications services as opposed to information services, so they are bound by the regulations of Title II of the Telecommunications Act of 1934, which provides the FCC the authority to regulate them as a public utility. This is a major development with substantial implications in the future of the industry. It is at the core of the appeal by the ISPs. The second major part of the ruling is the development of the so-called Brightline rules, which directly affect a consumer's ability to access content over the internet. Although they now go into effect and the denial of the stay request today increases the chance of those rules ultimately passing, it is awkward that they could still get lost in the appeals process. The Brightline rules basically compel ISPs to provide non-discriminatory access of legal internet content to consumers and also give content providers like Netflix or Facebook equitable access to the ISP broadband network in order to deliver that content. These Brightline rules are no blocking. ISPs cannot block access to legal content. No throttling. ISPs cannot throttle or slow down delivery of legal content. And no paid prioritization. ISPs cannot charge content providers for priority service. There's a whole lot more, but this is only a two-hour show, and we didn't get that far with the Apple stuff either.
It's a 400-page ruling.
And it's a 400-page ruling. So, although we're almost at the end of this hour, let us know what you think of the net neutrality ruling. You can give us a call. You won't get on for this hour, but you'll get on for the next hour, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
There's a new series on the National Geographic channel called American Genius, and they did one this week in Farnsworth versus Sarnoff. And most people don't know either of those names.
If they watched Warehouse 13.
Yep.
They at least know that there is a Farnsworth communications device.
Yeah. Philo Farnsworth invented television. David Sarnoff stole all his patents and founded RCA, the Radio Corporation of America, and got into making television.
Right.
So Sarnoff made all the money, and Farnsworth kind of degenerated into a drunken alcoholic depression.
It's basically Tesla versus Edison.
Yeah. But it was a really interesting a story. And so Farnsworth is legally credited with inventing the television when he was a 15-year-old high school senior.
Yeah.
but this Telecommunications Act of 1934, that's about when Sarnoff was getting the power with RCA and created the NBC television network and the radio, the National Broadcasting Company. People don't remember these acronyms.
Right.
The Radio Corporation of America.
RCA.
RCA, yeah. The Victor Talking Something Company. That made the Victrola.
Made the Victrola.
That RCA bought. Talking Machine Company. Victor Talking Machine Company. And all of these companies that sort of merged together to become these media conglomerates today. There was a lot of comparison between Morgan and Carnegie and Vanderbilt.
And Blackbeard.
Yeah. Yeah, from the generation earlier with the railroads and the and oil, Standard Oil and the breakup of Standard Oil and then the breakup of AT&T 50 years later that now is sort of kind of merged all back together again.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see how the different laws worked back then and a lot of the patent litigation was, you invented the television, no one can make a television without licensing from you. And it was easier for Sarnoff to sue and keep Farnsworth in court forever, racking up massive legal bills, and just go ahead and build whatever he wanted anyway.
Right.
Which
is what the ISPs are trying to do now with the Net Neutrality Act, get it tied up in the courts so it can't go forward. But the courts have said, no, nonsense, we're going to go forward anyway.
We're not charging you a premium. We are shaping our network to utilize the bandwidth.
Right.
Yeah, and same thing, they had one on the Wright brothers versus Glenn Curtis, which is especially, close to home here, literally, with Hammondsport and the Curtis Museum.
Right.
The Wright brothers had the patent on the airplane, but Curtis was the first one to publicly demonstrate it, and for years he was considered the father of the airplane. And they were caught in patent lawsuits forever.
Yep.
Until the war broke out and screwed everybody.
Yep. And so the courts are often not the friend of the patent holder as much as they are the friend of the person with the most money who can sue. Well, Johnny Cochran said it. Several other lawyers have said it. The person with the most money wins. Actually, he said the person with the best lawyer wins. But
that means the most money to hire the best lawyer.
Right, exactly. And so we're seeing that playing out now, very similar. The past does repeat often enough, and so we're seeing that playing out in terms of the Net Neutrality Act. We'll see what happens in the future. All right, that music tells me that we are approximately 1 hour into this two-hour love fest. I don't know what you were thinking for the first hour actually listening to us, but unless you're really bright, you'll be listening to the next hour as well. We'll be back with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC, Greece, Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you are listening to us. And we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Just like our friend, like our friend Scott did from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Scott. What's up?
Hi, guys.
Got me running.
I'm looking here at my iPad right next to me, and I'm calling from my iPhone, of course.
Yeah,
I
can hear you.
My iPad right next to me, and the keyboard below when I want to type a message in, keyboard is split in half. It's almost as if they took a standard keyboard, cut it in half, put the left left one quarter, actually cut it in quarters, put the left one quarter on the left side of the window, and the right one quarter on the right side.
Yep,
and a huge space in the middle.
That's the split keyboard feature. You found it. It basically allows you to hold your iPad left and right hands and type with your thumbs on those two little keyboards.
Well, I think what he'd like to do is put them back together again. I'm fairly sure that's what he's calling about.
Tap and hold on the keyboard icon, and there'll be a command to dock and merge, I think is what it calls.
Is that in the preferences?
No, it's on the keyboard itself.
Oh.
So if you tap and hold on the keyboard icon, you can split it also undock it, so you can move it up and down anywhere on the screen. And if you tap and hold on that keyboard icon in the lower right-hand corner again, there is a dock and merge that will merge the two halves back together and then dock it back down at the bottom.
Oh, very good.
So
what happens if I hold it down and when I go to press on dock and merge, the symbol disappears. Or if I use two fingers,
you can't,
and dock and merge,
anything. It's press and hold on dock and merge, and then without letting up at all, highlight dock and merge.
Slide your thumb up to dock and merge.
Oh, look at that.
There you go.
Well, Well, thank you for sharing this benefit.
It is why we are here. Thank you.
Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
So someone may have been playing with his iPad and turned on that feature.
Or he did it accidentally himself. Those things. It's easy to do so many things on an iPad, but if you're not paying as much attention, then you get yourself into a place you don't know how to get out of.
You may have been trying to hold the shift key and accidentally hit the dock and merge.
Right.
Now, that one of the things they're adding in the new iOS is caps lock. Well, not caps lock. Normally on the keyboard, it shows you all caps. And when you hit the shift key, you are in uppercase, and when you hit the shift key again, you're in lowercase, but it still shows you all uppercase letters on the keyboard.
Right.
And apparently that goes back to a BlackBerry patent, that they had a patent on showing lowercase letters on the screen. Because I remember
Google must be paying them then, because they show lowercase.
Yep. So either that patent's expiring or Apple is now going to pay BlackBerry too to be able to show upper and lowercase right on the screen.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Kramer from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Kramer. What's up?
Hi, Nick. You know me.
I know you. What's up?
I have a problem. The computer is dead. I must have got taken a spike yesterday because we came home. All the lights in the house were out. Then they came back on. They're out for about a half hour.
Yeah.
Now, on the power strip that I had it on, the only thing that's not working is the computer. I had the printer, scanner, the modem, and the internet, the wireless router. That's all working.
All right. If you take the computer off the power strip...
Yes.
And plug it in somewhere else. Does it work again?
I haven't tried it to a different outlet, but I figured the outlet must be all right because this.
No. The outlet is probably fine, but if you've got it plugged into a power bar, it may be that particular plug on the power bar got zapped.
Okay, I moved it to another one that was empty.
Okay.
Take it completely off that power strip. Don't trust that power strip again. If a spike went through it, then there could be something bad in the power strip. So plug the computer directly into the wall and see what happens.
Yeah.
But it may have been that the power supply in the computer died.
Yeah. Now, when you do turn it on, do you see in the back there the fan and the power supply even turn? Or sometimes when you hit the button on the front, you got to be looking... more or less, reach your hand around to the front and look at the back. When you hit that button, see if the fans move or if they just sort of quick and then stop, because you might have gotten lucky and blown just the power supply.
No way.
Yeah.
No, it, I've seen it happen.
Yeah,
there is what they call a pico fuse in the power supply. That if it's on and it gets surges, quite often, sometimes you can get lucky, and it'll take that out.
Okay,
I mean, you might just have to take it to a shop and have them look at it, and they could tell you whether it's been, you know, it's just a power supply or whether the whole motherboard was taken out.
Yeah.
And part of the problem...
the motherboard is taken out. Is the hard drive okay?
Most of the time has been my experience... Yes, usually the power hard drives are still okay.
But it's possible that it could be damaged too.
Right.
And part of the problem is power strips and even, you know, surge protectors don't really handle that common a problem. You rarely actually get a surge. We more often see dropouts and brownouts and blackouts and spikes. And so to protect your computer equipment, you really need a UPS, an uninterruptible, which I can never pronounce, power supply. It's basically a battery for your desktop computer, so that if the power fails, it runs off battery and can shut down normally instead of just crashing completely.
Yeah, because what got me is I figured if it was the power strip, why would the modem and router and printer be working?
Right,
because one of the outlets on the power strip could have failed. Fail open, or what's even worse, it fails closed, and then there's no protection at all.
Right. So try plugging it into a separate outlet somewhere and see if it works. If not, then you're right. It may well just be the power supply or the whole machine. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, the next question is who can I take it to that's reliable in the area?
Because there are a number of...
had theirs done similar, but unfortunately, they took them someplace and...
Tell you what, email me, Dave, at jazz90.1.org.
I can't email, Nick.
No, this is Dave.
If his computer's dead, he can't email.
Yeah, well, then give me a call.
Okay.
And I'll give you some advice, okay?
Okay, what's your phone number?
Just look in the phone book and write PC. Okay?
It's under PC?
Enright PC.
Enright.
Okay.
All right.
Slower. You're breaking up a little bit. Could you repeat that?
It's Dave Enright. So it's Enright PC. Just look in the yellow pages under Enright PC, okay?
Enright.
We're trying to stop the wackos from calling Dave. We don't want to give too much information out on the air.
Right.
Yeah, but Nick can vouch for me. He knows me.
Yeah, I do. So give Dave a call, and forgot his name for a minute. Give Dave a call, and
yeah, 25 years.
He'll put you in touch with some really good folks.
Yeah, tell Nick Elaine was working very hard this morning.
That's what I like to hear. My wife is at the public market at the Flower City Coffee Company, handing out coffee. A little too cold for the cold drinks today. Mm-hmm. In the summer, she has lemonade and of various flavors and iced coffee and all that stuff.
We go there all the time.
Yep, I know. Yep. I was telling everybody else because I know you know.
Yeah, right.
All right, so thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling. Yeah, it's electricity is so weird. You can have four devices on a power strip. One of them gets blasted and the other three are fine.
Yep, that makes no sense.
But it happens all the time. And people argue with me. But the other three are good. I don't care. There's simply nothing. I just don't care.
And it doesn't matter they worked yesterday. They don't work now.
Right.
And something broke.
And the thing of it is, though, is the demand on that particular outlet. You know, the PC is going to take a lot more power.
Right.
That, or, you know, surge, you know, is going to be more severe on that than a modem.
The first device in the line is going to take more the hit first and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'd like you to comment on something I read, and I, of course, can't find again to lead you to. And I have a question on using HDMI cable from a laptop to get a picture on my TV. I'll start with that. I've used my Windows laptop, very successful, HDMI cable into the TV, see the things. I've got a Linux laptop running Mint that I want to use. I can just leave it next to the TV and not have to move things around. When I plug in the HDMI cable, bring it around to the TV, my desktop is there. It's active. I can move the cursor around, see it on the TV. But when I go to, let's say, YouTube to watch a video, it stays on the desktop. I can see the YouTube video on my laptop screen. I'm sorry, I keep saying desktop. On my laptop screen, but on the TV is my desktop.
Yeah, you have to move the YouTube window to the other screen because your computer now thinks it just has two screens. Or you need to turn on video mirroring so the same image is displayed on both screens.
Okay.
And that depends on your computer as to what the keys are. Often there's a key on the keyboard, F4, F5, F6, that has two little what are supposed to look like TV tubes. And that switches between what's called mirroring and spanning. in mirroring mode. Actually, that only would probably work under Windows. It's different than Linux, isn't it? Mirroring mode shows the same image on both displays. Spanning mode lets you take the two displays as just one giant desktop. So you can have a bunch of windows on one desktop display, and you can have other windows on the other display. There should also be a place to set the arrangement of the windows. So depending on if the monitors are left side and right side or right side and left side, you can figure out and tell the computer what position the monitors are in as well. And Nick is frantically looking for the keys to how to set that up.
The real question becomes, are you mirroring the desktop or are you extending the desktop?
Right, yeah. And you set that, there's the equivalent of the display control panel in Linux Mint to switch between mirroring and extended display.
Okay, so I got it. But that's not going to be a function of the BIOS in the laptop. That's going to be a Linux function.
Yes, exactly. Now, which version of Linux are you using? There's Mate and there's the other one.
I'm using Cinnamon Mint.
Cinnamon, that's the other one. Okay. I don't know where to find it in Cinnamon. Thank you.
Somewhere there's a the equivalent of control panels where you set up your display settings, and it should be in there somewhere.
Right, right. It's somewhere in the display settings, but I don't know where those are.
Getting to learn this is a huge learning curve.
Yeah. But that's the thing you really need to do.
Okay, so just go to the display panel and find something for mirroring.
Well, if you look in the equivalent of the control panel.
Right.
And in the equivalent of display.
Okay.
When you actually have the HDMI cable plugged in and working, when you see what's on your desktop and what's on the television, are they exactly the same, or can you move the cursor between the two?
He moves the cursor back and forth. So his YouTube window is on one monitor, and he wants it on the other.
Right. So you can do one of two things, which is just move that whole window over, or in what you're doing now is extending the desktop, and what you might prefer to do is mirror the desktop.
So you see the same image on both monitors.
Right, that's what I wanted. I want to see the same image on both monitors.
That's mirroring. So you're using Cinnamon, and you want to mirror the desktop is really what you want to do.
Okay. Now, what the other thing I mentioned is I read that we're talking about the Windows 10 upgrade.
Yeah.
And I have read that they're only going to upgrade the more popular versions of Windows 7 and Windows 8. Is that like I have Ultimate on my is Windows 7?
It's Windows 7 and Windows 8.1.
But this article, and I think it was PC Magazine, which I could be wrong on, said that it was they weren't going to do all the versions. In other words, they're going to do home because it's popular.
We got to take a break. I'm sorry. We got to stay on the line. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we have Steve from Greece still on the line. Hiya, Steve.
Hello, guys.
Sorry I had to cut you off. We had to take the break.
I understand. You got to pay the bills. Got to keep the lights on.
Exactly.
Even if people do hit the poles and knock things down.
Exactly. Exactly. So here's the deal. It appears that every version of Windows 7 and 8 will be upgraded as long as you have Service Pack 1 on Windows 7.
And you need Windows 8.1.
And it's got to be Windows 8.1, not 8.
So if you have 8 now, do the free update to 8.1 before it goes away.
Right.
That will go away?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Once they don't want you on 8 anymore, they're just going to take all that stuff away. So do the upgrade to 8.1, and that way you'll be ready for 10. The other thing is if you have Media Center, that will go away.
Well, I heard that.
And if you are an enterprise user, Windows 7 Enterprise, you don't get the upgrade. I'm assuming that's because you do that separately with Microsoft through your business.
Yeah, I looked up and saw that, like, I have Windows 7 Ultimate on my laptop, and that would upgrade to Pro, but if I only had Windows 10 Pro.
Yeah.
But if I had Windows 7 Home or less, it only upgrades to Windows 10 Home. Is there only two versions of Windows 10 coming out?
There are multiple versions, just like there are with everything else.
And you can only upgrade to the same level you're at now.
Right. They,
or one up in the case of what Steve's got.
Okay.
I don't think there is a 10 Ultimate. I think that's
what they don't have. Yeah, right, right. I think there's fewer versions. There's Home and Pro, and I believe that's it.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you have Windows 7, you must have Service Pack 1.
Oh, yeah, I've got that, of course.
If you have Windows 8, you must have Windows 8.1, and that must be fully updated. As long as the theory is... The theory is, as long as Windows 7 Service Pack 1 or Windows 8.1 updated run okay on your current hardware, 10 will run okay on your current hardware.
Right.
And the Microsoft FAQ page still says you have 1 year to take advantage of this, so it expires July 29th, 2016.
Yeah.
So even though some Microsoft rep may have been quoted as saying something else somewhere else, the Microsoft website still says 1 year.
Yep.
And, of course, that could change at the end of the year. They might want you to upgrade it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it does say once you upgrade, you have Windows 10 for free on that device. Now, what people read is, oh, I will always have Windows 10 for free. What I read, because I'm a cynic, is when Windows 10.1 comes out, they can charge you.
Yeah. While you were gone, I looked up cynic in the dictionary. I saw your picture, Nick.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's exactly right. You aren't kidding. All right. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thank you.
Let me be honest. I've never been disappointed in Microsoft because I've always been cynical. Well, about all of them. Everybody. Apple, Google, Microsoft.
All it takes is a change of leadership. Ballmer probably would never have given it away for free, but Nutella is.
Right, and once Nutella's done, then it's somebody else, and it changes again. Or once
it's the same thing we're hearing on the Apple side. Well, Steve Jobs never would have done that. Well, Tim Cook has done a lot of things Steve Jobs wouldn't have done, but most of them have been pretty good for Apple, coming up on a trillion-dollar company.
Exactly. All right, here's somebody we haven't heard from in a while, our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York.
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
How are you?
Hey, listen, I was able to pick up from my employer. They're upgrading all the computers and eliminating the XP ones. And I was given permission to grab one of the PCs. It's a desktop. And I was told, well, some of them work, some of them don't. Well, mine does fire up. But the problem is when the first thing it says is hit Control-Alt-Delete and you log in. And the problem is it comes up with administrator. And I don't know the password for administrator. So the question is this. If I booted up in safe drive in the safe mode, is there anything I can do without having to go back to the IT manager and say I need the password?
Erase it and start over.
It's running XP, don't want it anyway.
They should have done.
Well, the price is free. They basically said there's a palette of computers. If you want one, grab one.
They should have done that before they gave them away.
Yeah,
too.
But
how much confidential information is on there?
Well, that's the other thing, right? I mean, if they didn't wipe them out, now we're back to my security rant again.
Yeah.
What idiot let a bunch of computers out without erasing
them? And it's configured to go into it sounds like a network.
Well, that's the other thing is this. You're right. I mean, right now I do not have it hooked up to the internet, and it's not hooked up to our network. So once I got into the home page, I just wanted to just hook it up as a second computer to have to hook up to the internet.
The best thing you can do is just, what was that one site? You can go find old versions of XP.
I put Linux on it. But there are programs you can download from the internet, and I won't tell you what they are or where they are, that will crack the passwords on machines. But more importantly, you don't know what's on that machine. You don't know if it's got viruses. You don't know anything about it.
Yeah, true.
So were I you, I would reformat the entire thing.
Yeah, because there's so
probably
much other stuff.
A nice version
who
of Linux
knows what
on
else?
It.
How long the registry and everything else could just be so mucked up, going into a server and connecting to all these other drives and shares. Simple life.
It's not worth the bottom line. It's not worth it.
You got it, Toyota.
Because right. So if the price is right, it's not worth it.
Well, just think of it as a computer and erase it and put your own OS on it.
Exactly. I mean, it's lovely to get free hardware, and if you're looking at an older machine, it's going to be a little slower. It's not going to maybe run 10 or whatever that's about, but it certainly will run various forms of Linux. And
yeah,
it
I was
going to
say
will...
a Linux would be far better for it.
Well, how do I even download the Linux and replace the operating system, which is XP Professional, with Linux? Well, I can't even log into it.
You don't have to.
What you do is you need to be able to go into the BIOS.
Uh-huh.
Set the... Do you have a CD-ROM?
Yes.
Okay, you set the CD-ROM to boot first. I suspect if the system administrator at that place didn't even bother to wipe out the hard drives, it's already set to boot from the CD first. So you download any whatever version of Linux you want.
Right.
On another machine, burn a disk.
Right. Put it into the drive.
Put it in the drive, boot it up. You'll have a number of choices. One is wipe out the hard drive and use the whole thing for Linux. Go.
Got it. Okay. Hey, the other thing is this. I'm noticing that a lot of merchants are currently selling PCs operating 8.1 before the version 10 comes out later this summer. There's some good deals to buy either a laptop or a desktop right now.
Mm-hmm.
Should I wait and actually buy a machine, let's say? And again, August is a great month to buy computers because a lot of kids are going back to school, college, right. High school, etc. So a lot of the merchants online and the box stores are selling computers at a pretty good price in the month of August. Should I wait and buy a computer in August with the operating system 10 installed right now, or should I buy 8.1 and then try to do an upgrade? My concern would be, well, what if I get a hiccup and all of a sudden something doesn't go right with the upgrade?
Yes, I agree with you. If there's a hiccup, that's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's going to take quite a while, depending on, you know, if you're not on fiber, it's going to take forever to download the whole OS.
So the bottom line, you suggest, you know, instead of going buying one next week, wait till the end of July or mid-August and buy a system that's already got 10 loaded onto it.
If you can wait, yeah.
Yeah, if yeah.
Just
if
then, and the back-to-school sales will be coming out. Yeah,
and besides, that gives you an extra computer. Where are you going wrong there?
And the 10-to-1 odds, you're only going to have to wait until next month, because theoretically, they start the sales mid-July because the kids are already going back to school in August.
Right.
So you're only going to have to wait until mid-July because they want to get, you know, their ads out there to entice folks because they know the kids got to get all this stuff together if they're, you know, going
to
school.
Do you guys know offhand, is July something is for the release date of operating OS 10?
29th.
Okay. So I'm sure the stores like Office, Mac, Staples, they'll be selling the OS 10s in early
July
to mid 29th.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look for a back to school sale. Pick a nice machine with stuff you want on it, and you're on your way.
Okay. But the bottom line is this: if I can download, how big of a download is a Linux operating system to burn onto a drive?
Depends on the version you get. Most of them are
a DVD, though.
Yeah, well, some of them will be a CD, and then they download other stuff from the internet. Give it a shot in terms of letting it go on for hours.
I'm actually looking at this old HP computer, and it's operating on an Intel Pentium D.
Wow.
Is that good?
Well, it's not great.
That was the dual core, wasn't it?
That was the dual
the,
core.
One of the first
so,
dual cores, yeah.
It's not great, but it's not certainly not bad in terms of what it was. I would probably not go with a real high-end version of Linux. I would use something with, say, XFCE.
Say again, please, Nick.
XFCE. Xerox Frank Charlie Echo.
Yeah.
That's a low-end but excellent Windows manager, so you don't have a lot of the bells and whistles, but then I suspect your video card won't handle a lot of bells and whistles.
Yeah, this is going to be, you know, this machine is probably at least 7-8 years old.
Right. So maybe Ubuntu with Xubuntu is the one I would look at.
Repeat that again, please.
It's Ubuntu with an X in front of it.
Okay.
At I believe it's at xubuntu.org, I suspect.
Okay.
And that's a... that honestly is the version I use on my 8 gig.
Yeah, and again, if it blows up, then you know what? Who cares? Because again, the price was right.
Right. It's. You can download a 32 or 64-bit version. I suggest the 32-bit version. How much RAM does this thing have?
I don't know.
Okay. But those are the kind of questions you need to ask yourself, and those are the kind of things that you'll be looking at before you do a download.
Well, you know what? This could be like a little summer project for myself. And again, if it doesn't go right, you know, I just take it to a recycle place and say it even dirty.
There you go. Well, you can also, I mean, there's a bunch you can try. There's also a product called Damn Small Linux, another one called Puppy Linux. So all of these are choices that you can play with to see where they take you before you end up.
Okay.
Tossing the thing.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
All right. Have Bye-bye. Fun.
And it looks like most of the downloaders are about a gigabyte between 850 and 950 megs. And oftentimes you can create a USB flash drive of the installer, and that runs a lot faster than a CD would.
Well, but on an 8-year-old computer, That's it true. May not boot to the...
You may not be able to boot from flash.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So... but that's certainly an option for a machine that will boot from flash. So the latest version of Linux is 15.04, which means it came out in April of 2015. The previous version, 14.10, which of course came out in October.
Trusty tar.
Right. The version that came out in 2014 is an LTS version, which means long-term support. Some versions are only really supported until the next version comes out. 15.04 is like that. 14.10 is long-term support, so it will be supported for, I believe, it's 3 years. So if you're a cutting-edge kind of person, then the 15.04 release is lovely, and the differences are not huge. So I wouldn't get overly excited about it one way or the other, but. Some versions are LTS, long-term support, and that means you don't need to update as often. It updates all the stuff that's in there, but you may not have the bleeding edge things that sometimes cause a machine to crash. You end up with a stable system. So I tend to put the long-term support machines on my main desktop because I just need to get work done, and then on laptop or whatever, I'll put 15.04, because if it screws up, then I can just erase it. Who cares? But, you know, my main Let's Get It Done disk, machine rather, I tend to put the long-term support on. So you get a lot of choices with Linux. You get a choice of the operating system, who you buy it from. You get a choice of what front end you have, the GUI on the front. And there are dozens of them, most fairly obscure. LXCE, I want to say, is under Ubuntu. XFCE is under Xubuntu. Ubuntu itself uses Unity. Linux Mint has both Mate and Cinnamon, and those are even different, slightly OSs. So, or GUI, so there's a whole lot of stuff there. Listen, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 39 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites. Remember, oh, you know the story. Member Sport of Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And Dave...
Yeah, I want to remind folks, we got this contest going on right now. Well, it's not a... Well, in a way it is. what Rob's asking us to do is have you folks listen every day, which you should be, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Because what's happening is he's going to be giving away tickets. Those are club passes to the upcoming Jazz Fest. And that's going to, you know, get you into over 230-plus music venues between June 19th and the 20th, 27th. And, you know, it's a $200-plus dollar value. And all you have to do is have your radio tuned to Jazz 90.1. And during the day, between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., you'll hear an announcement to call, and you could win two passes. So, or a pass to, it's just one pass, I'm sorry, to the Jazz Fest. So, you want to get in on it? Have your radio tuned right here. The members supported Jazz 90.1.
Cool. Well, that's cool. Jazz Fest is such a great thing.
And that's the other thing I got to correct. A lot of, and even some folks where I was working, well, I'm not into jazz. Well, you know what? You're shorting yourself. Because here's the thing. The Jazz Fest originally started, I believe it's, 14 years ago now. 14 or 15, I forget which annual one this is coming up. But anyways, it started out as a jazz venue, and it was only a couple days, and it only played in one venue. Well, it rapidly grew and grew and grew to where now they've got venues all over the city downtown within the Gibbs Street walking area that you can go to and listen to great music. Not necessarily jazz. What I would recommend is you folks taking the time to go to our website, and we've got a link to the folks that are going to be playing at the Xerox Rochester Greater Jazz Fest from A to Z. And they are from R&B to like Diana Krall. I mean, they've got some great acts. Trombone Shorty. Blood, Sweat, and Tears is going to be out on the street on the 20th. Yep. It's a free concert. Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And there's other venues that, you know, out on Gibbs Street that you can check out for free. And I know for one, Soul Stew is playing that Thursday night. Again, another R&B group. But it's a great time. You know, it's family friendly. So, you know, the whole family can come down, listen to some great music. We have school bands playing. So check it out. It's well worth, you investing a little bit of time. And who knows, you might have a great time coming on down. And if you do, we'll be down on Gibbs Street broadcasting throughout the whole week. So come on down and say hello.
The Steep Canyon Rangers are going to be here, and they're going to be playing bluegrass.
Yep.
So it isn't all jazz.
Oh, Trombone Shorty is going to be doing a concert.
He's amazing. He's kind of amazing.
Out on the street. I mean, yeah. And check, like I say, Gibbs Street every night. There's different groups that play there. And that's all free also.
Right. Most years that the Steep Canyon Rangers are here, Steve Martin is with them.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know that he'll be here
this
year.
No, he's not here this year.
But. Yeah. But
it's going to be a great time. It's upcoming. Wonderful. And it's one of... the great things that happen here in Rochester that you get to go downtown. There's not many reasons to go downtown and check it out, but for this, it's well worth it. And it's a whole, week plus one day. So, and I'm up there the whole time, and it's just a blast.
Yeah, stop by the tent.
Yeah, please, stop by and say hello.
Which is outside the Eastman.
Yep, we're going to be right there on Gibbs Street. So please, stop by, say hello. We get a lot of our listeners in that stop by and say, oh, yeah, I love it. And we look forward to seeing you.
And when you do, drop a buck in the pot there.
Yeah, there's a contribution container that we gladly accept. Coins or paper
we get
money.
So many people who come by and say, oh, I listen to the station.
Oh, yes.
Or say to us, we love your show.
Yeah.
And they're not members. And that kind of is not right.
Just come on down.
Come
drop
down and
it
drop
in.
A
yeah.
Bucket.
I mean, they have, you know, over 100,000 folks.
If everybody who came through dropped a buck in the pot.
We wouldn't have to do a pledge drive.
That's exactly right.
That would be
That is exactly right.
Unbelievable.
And so you should drop $2. To make up for the slackers, who we know you're not one of them.
Yes,
either Herb Alpert's coming.
Herb Alpert is coming, possibly with or without the Tijuana Brass.
Yeah, my first thought was he still alive. And yes, he is.
He's not that old.
He's 80.
I was going to say he better be if he's going to be doing a concert.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Donna from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Donna. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have a Nexus 7 tablet, which upgraded itself to Android version 5.1, and it's terrible.
Yes. Me too.
When I go to... pardon me?
Me too.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. Now, my shutdown option is only power off. I don't have the power off and restart or power off and restart in airplane mode. Can I get that back?
Not that I know of.
Okay, because I've been reading on forums, and I haven't seen that at all.
Yeah, I haven't been using my tablet much because, one, it's so slow to write down, and it's unbearable.
I'm honestly thinking of buying a new tablet. The problem is the amount of RAM. If you buy anything with a gig in it and put 5 on it now, it's going to be slow. You need 2 gigs of RAM minimum. So.
Well, when I upgraded my phone, they wound up giving me another tablet, a Verizon tablet. Normally, it was a $230 tablet. They had them because I was upgrading the phone for it was $25.
Not bad.
Yeah.
And it's got more RAM. And it's a faster processor, it's and great. It runs fine. Yeah. Sure.
Can you tell me how do I stop apps from loading at startup?
Well, are they apps? And what types of apps are loading at startup?
Okay, like Malwarebytes. And sometimes it'll open 3 or 4 applications of Malwarebytes instead of just one.
On your tablet?
Yeah.
Is there an auto-open setting somewhere?
I'm looking right now.
There is on the desktop OS.
I've gone through MySense like crazy and tried everything I can think of. I've actually even uninstalled some apps just because I don't want them to run at all.
Right. I get that. That's interesting. I don't see a way to do that, from there at least.
Okay, and one other thing about Windows 10 and how long it's supported and how long it's free.
Mm-hmm.
I read on CDNet that as long as you get it within that 1 year period, that it's free until you lose your machine or whatever.
Yes, but that does not necessarily mean it's going to be upgraded past a year.
And Microsoft can change their mind later.
They can change their mind. And B, again, that's Windows 10. What happens when Windows comes out with 10.1?
Which they very well might do the year after. Because
I don't trust Microsoft to not. I don't trust Microsoft to leave money on the table.
No.
Basically, that's the problem.
I have an 8.1 machine that I'm going to put Windows 10 on. So, do you recommend waiting more toward the end of that 1 year period?
No, go ahead and do it now.
Well, no, I'd wait a month. Let them fix any
Service
issues.
Pack 1.
that's what I was thinking. Now, I have that little icon in my taskbar on my PC, but it has yet to show up on my 2-in-1.
Yeah, Microsoft pushed out this new icon on many versions of Windows to give you the Windows 10 reservation list, but it hasn't showed up on all computers yet. And if you want to upgrade all your computers, you need to reserve it on all your computers. They said it eventually will, or when the actual release date is out, you'll be able to just go to Microsoft's website and do it.
Okay.
Or probably the store, the web store.
Yeah.
Yep. Now I'm seeing a few things about Android and phones downloading an application manager to stop applications from doing things, and that seems to be the weird way to do it. But if you go into settings, application services, you can kill the application. But I don't see a way to start it automatically.
Yeah, because that's kind of a pain to have to go in and shut down each application individually.
Right.
Yeah.
I do that as well. I have a little app called Active Apps. And by clicking on that, I can see which apps are currently active and end them right there.
There's the website I found at Stack Exchange talks about an Android app called Auto Starts and another one called Auto Run Manager, where you can you edit the permission of the intents, so you don't give it run permission, so then it stops.
Okay.
That seems to be a little too deep for average people too.
Well, I had a program called Advanced Task Killer.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be really cumbersome to use, and it sucked a lot of resources, and I ended up just taking it off the tablet.
Sure.
There is one called Auto Run Manager. I'm looking at it in the Google Play Store. It is free, and it says it can disable your auto-starting apps.
And we have a site that we can direct you to. Steve will put that up after the show. We have to go. I want to thank you, Donna. Thank you very much. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to all those of you to whom we did not get. You really need to call earlier. and more often, Chicago-style calling. That's it. We're done for another week. You've wasted two entire hours of your life listening to this nonsense. So you won't get another chance to do that for 166 hours. But we want to thank each and every one of you. And so we're done. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so you're fairly safe. Also, you're not actually here in the studio, so you're a little safer. And we'll be back next week with sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.